watch me. This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I'm going to ask you if you miss me, and I want you to lie and say yes. Just lie. Just outright lie, guys. Everybody wants to be missed.
I missed you, Bill.
There you go. Good job.
No PJ? Lie needed.
I was away, too, so I didn't miss you.
That's not lying.
Well, I wasn't here, so how can I miss you if
you can't miss me when you're at home?
You didn't miss me.
No, that's different, though.
Why is it different?
Well, I'm a force of nature. I'm an obnoxious jerk.
Oh.
People miss me when I'm gone. Even when I'm away, people say, well, I guess you'll probably have something to say about this, huh? You have something to say about everything. Well, it's just lunch, guys. I don't care one way or the other. And they say, okay, we'll go here. And I say, no, I'd prefer not to. You know what I've discovered recently? Where did Chuck's come from?
It took over a couple Clock Tower pub locations. And I think it's just kind of a roadhouse, like a mixture of...
Yeah, I've never heard of it. Suddenly it's everywhere. People want to go to Chuck's. Yeah.
I was there for dinner last night.
There you go, right?
I tried to go yes. Last week, yeah.
I was at one in Muskoka, and relative to what it costs to eat out these days, it was actually pretty cheap, I found.
$15 steak. You can't even buy it raw for that price.
How are they doing that?
That's a great question. $4 beers?
Only on Leaf playoff games, though. So
$5 on
There's
other
no
days.
More of those.
$5 on
yeah,
other
I knew
days.
That would be short-lived. Drink that, boys. Drink that $4 beer now while you can.
This fact, is sadness.
You want a lot of it before game. You know, I can't. I don't even want to talk about it now.
It was a good series. They came back. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, I am so. I'm numb now. I'm numb. I was mad last year that they didn't change the team after the big defeat. I was mad the year before they didn't change the team. They just keep sticking with the same core group of people. All great players, but they just don't work together. And they cannot play in those big games. Maybe we'll hear today what happened with Austin Matthews. They had these weird illnesses and sicknesses. And
apparently he lost 15 pounds.
Oof.
Yeah, that's something not right there. Anyway... I don't want to talk about it. Let's just do something else here.
Carol's Coffee. And hot takes.
Breakfast item number one.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says no amount of pressure from foreign countries or organizations will stop Israel from defending itself.
I pledge here today from Jerusalem on this Holocaust Remembrance Day. If Israel is forced to stand alone... Israel will stand alone.
I don't think anybody doubts that, do they? At this
no.
point? I certainly don't doubt it.
No.
There's a building and an amount of criticism happening in Israel about Netanyahu's leadership, and he's always been a controversial figure there, for sure. But it looks like the final push is coming, and he said, we are not going to stop until Hamas is gone. Otherwise, if we end this war now, Hamas will just come back, and we go right back to where we were. I would think it'd be a few years down the road because that the Gaza Strip and all of its cities are going to have to be massively rebuilt.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's right. It would go back to the way it was before. But yeah, I don't think the final push is going to be stopped by anyone. And I'm not surprised by that. And I don't think I blame him very much for thinking that way.
Item number two.
India's foreign affairs minister accused Canada of welcoming criminals from his country in response to the RCMP's recent arrest in a homicide that was roiled tensions between the two countries.
These are wanted criminals from India. You have given them visas. They have come, many of them, in false documentation. And yet you allow them to live there. If you decide to import for political purposes, people with very dubious, actually very negative background.
Well, I think he's half right. I do think it's very possible our country allowed criminals into the country because it happens from other regions of the world. So might be right. But what does that really change if in the end the Indian government hired them to kill somebody? Does it really change the story substantially? It sounds like they're trying to make a lot of noise to distract from something else. I just want to address, I noticed on X or Twitter, somebody said, yeah, I remember Bill Carroll didn't even believe this was happening and he criticized the prime minister for talking about it, which is not true. I didn't know whether it was happening or not. Didn't know then, still don't know now. But what I said was it was pretty convenient that the prime minister had just been embarrassed at some big international meeting. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, you know, we're mad at India. It was an inappropriate time to release that information. And then I bet some of our international partners are not happy that he said. And anyway, we got this information from the United States and from the UK, and which made our intelligence services look really stupid and our country look too reliant on foreign countries. But yeah, I criticized the timing of it. As to whether or not India is responsible for a murder on Canadian soil, I have no idea, nor did the person on Twitter who suddenly, so yes, I called it Twitter again, suddenly so sure of themselves on it.
Item number 3.
A new online Ledger poll suggests that the majority of Canadians feel their right to freedom of speech is in danger.
Often the people who see freedom of expression under threat now, like many people who are more conservative, feel conservative voices aren't heard. We're not so much in favor of freedom of expression of people they didn't like, and conversely on the left.
57% of us said our free speech is under threat. You made an interesting point, though. It depends on which speech you consider to be free.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like what the other person's saying, it's probably hate speech and illegal. And if you do like what they have to see, they say they have the right to say it. I don't know that you could say free speech is under siege in Canada when our universities are filled with protesters chanting. And I do think we let people cross the line into hate speech much too often on our streets these days with the pro-Hamas demonstrations that we've seen out there. So I think we'll be okay for a little while longer.
What about cancel culture?
Wait, was that someone knocking on my door there?
Oh, there you go. Yeah, cancel culture being the other flip of that coin, right?
Well, even cancel culture has dialed back a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair.
I felt it was more under, especially for someone in media.
Yeah,
free speech was more under fire a few years ago than it seems to be today. I think cancel culture blew up in the faces of a few people who thought it was a great idea. And like the Me Too movement, it's a little harder for the people who were supporting the Me Too movement and out on the streets chanting for it to talk about it now that they're out there supporting Hamas rape of Jews. I think they back themselves into a bit of a corner on that one. 6:16, I wish I had more time, but we took an extra minute or two to get. You know, I should learn that when I've been on vacation, for some reason, there's like a heat-up time for my equipment, which makes no sense. They're not vacuum tubes, not 1957. Why is it taking time? But we're sounding good now, PJ. Everything's good?
Crystal clear. Like you never left.
Yeah, and at first it didn't.
I couldn't hear you at first, yeah.
Yeah, it was weird, but I didn't change anything. Just got better as it warmed up. Belly, turn on the TV and wind them up for the Leaf game tonight, will you? We used to have to do that. And why with this equipment?
Do you have someone in Manitic like powering like a hamster wheel to give you power?
Could be the squirrels were tired. Yeah, might have been that. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning, 6:17.
This is location near you.
You're my little boo thing, so I'll give a hoot what you do say, girl. I know you a little too tame. I'll be shooting that shot like 2K, girl. I know.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
So I was away for a couple of days last week, golfing with the spouses while our smarter, better half had a conference, a work-related thing. So that's kind of nice to get away, but we were back for the weekend. And I did something really fun and different on Saturday at Lansdowne Stadium. They did this last year. This was the second year they've tried it. But you do 9 holes of golf at Lansdowne Stadium. Well, sort of. What they've done is they've set up hitting platforms all around the stadium up on different levels. So they built temporary stands that stretch out over seats. And then they put 3 targets on the field. Then you have to hit your ball at one of the targets. Depending on how close you get to the circle, you get a score. And it's a little weird because I used to work. I did a part-time job where I was installing TV antennas on roofs. That's how old I am. TV antennas on roofs. People used to have a TV up there, or then later it became satellite dishes. But you'd have to climb up this tower and it sort of looked like a ladder. And I could climb up there all day long and attach and look down and, you know, throw stuff down that I needed, or pass by rope stuff up that I needed. I'd climb up and down all day. Heights did not bother me. I took one step on the first platform. Wasn't too high. Hit the ball. Was okay. Got to the second one. By then, we had to climb up on the north stand. We're roughly halfway up. And it freaked me out. I could hit the golf ball, but I couldn't turn all the way into the shot because I felt like I was going to lose balance and fall over and go tumbling down into the seats below. Probably wasn't even as high up as it looked, but you over the edge of the platform, all you see is the field, right? And it's way down there. So it was probably, I don't know, 8 feet. Enough you'd hurt yourself if you fell off. But it was really fun. And a really interesting way to get around and see the stadium. And they had music playing and lots of people lined up to do it. So that was kind of cool. And you just use your short irons because you, although I could have probably used my driver and still not hit it all the way over to the other side to put anyone in danger. But yeah, you just bring your, you know, pitching wedge and whatever and hit balls around. That was really kind of cool. And there was a big, some kind of sick event going on that day as well. So there were lots of people wearing colorful costumes and playing music, and there was a lot of energy. I love that part of the city. I really do. I love Lansdowne. I think it's great. I spend way more time there. It wasn't so difficult to get parking, but we went early and got parking and had a little breakfast at the Sunset Grill. So we took our time. It was all very civilized. That was kind of fun. And then we came back and actually went out golfing on the golf course, Sylvie and I, in the afternoon.
Golf.
Pretty tired.
That's a lot of golf.
That's a lot of exercise for someone like me, whose exercise usually means leaning over to grab the remote control and ultimately saying to one of the kids, give me the remote control, will you? I don't want to have to. Grab me some water out of the fridge while you're up. I don't want to have to exert myself to get it. So, yeah, it was really fun. Something cool to do. So it was only 2 days, but if you sound like you'd be into that, maybe try next year if they do it again. I would imagine they would. Don't know how much money they ultimately made on it. It wasn't very expensive. It was $50 a person. Not cheap, but you have to have a lot of people to pay for, you know, they had to build the stands and or the platforms, and they had staff there, security, to make sure you didn't stick your head out to see how your spouse was hitting and get whacked in the face with a ball. But yeah, something to do next year if you're looking for something. A little, get an early practice in on the golf season. 6:29 and 7 degrees, it's the Morning Rush.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And now.
And the best part is.
Bill's best binges.
Okay, usually I wait till I've seen an entire series before I talk about it on the air, which kind of makes sense. But you're going to have to accept a little less, baby, right now because it's summer and I'm not going to spend every minute in the house. If I can get out, I'm going to get out. I had a busy week, so I didn't binge watch any TV shows for you. Wrapped up a couple that I think I'd mentioned in passing. No, I don't even think we wrapped up any, or I would be talking about those this morning. No, it was I sat down last night in front of the TV and the seat felt uncomfortable. It was no longer shaped like my butt. It had started to recover a little bit from me being away for a week. But I had a couple of series that I wanted to watch because I've seen earlier seasons. Season 3 of Hacks dropped this past weekend. Hacks.
Deborah, after your special, your career's never been hotter. Did you ever think you'd be back on top?
Yes. This isn't the same as before. No more jokes about my physical appearance.
Oh, come on. Now, those are grandfathered in.
What's up, Josefina?
Ava, do you need me to give your hair CPR because it is limp and lifeless?
No workaround.
Put all these eyes on me now. I'm finally respected. Anything I want to do, I have to do now.
Full body chills. Feel goosebumps.
No.
I was perfectly content being a gorgeous Vegas comic, and then you come along, and you make me want more for myself.
So you're mad at me for pushing you to be better?
Yes!
On Crave. If you want to watch it here in Canada, it was an HBO Max series starring, you must know the voice, the great actor Gene Smart and a young stand-up comedian named Hannah Einbinder. And basically the series centers on these two characters, the relationship. It's a professional relationship between a young comedy writer who said some inappropriate things on social media just as her career was starting to take off. And then she found herself out of work. So her, her manager only could find one job, writing for this stand-up comedian played by Jean Smart, kind of like a Joan Rivers sort of character. So very old woman kind of humor, outdated stuff, but she's also a nightmare to work for. She's got houses all over the world, lots of great clothes, tons of money, and just talks down to everyone. It's a really toxic, abusive relationship between employer and employee. Not as bad as some of the program directors I've worked with over the years, but close. Very close to it. So, but it's hilarious because, as you know, Jean Smart is a very great actor. And this young woman is pretty strong too. So, great chemistry between the two of them. And, I, you know, it's a nice change for me when I get bogged down in these police procedurals where they take an entire season to solve one mystery. There's a different storyline each. I mean, there's a overarching stories about their relationships with each other and outside of that. And but each episode kind of stands alone. And season three, well, I should mention, by the way, it's won every award imaginable. It's hugely successful. And it actually had perfect scores on Rotten Tomatoes, 100 scores, seasons one and two. And this season, which just dropped, is 96. So pretty strong still. I think it was one review was negative, 25 out of 26. So it's 96. But on Metacritic, season one was 82. Season two was 88. Season three is 90. So I think if I know how that works, that's better, right? 90 is better than 88. So on Rotten Tomatoes, it's not quite as good. On Metacritic, it's even better. I would say it's a bit of a slow starter because at the end of season two, they stop working together. And I won't tell you why in case you haven't seen the entire first couple of seasons. They stop working together and they've taken a jump in time. So now it's one of those, 1 year later, the young comedy writer has a job now and she has a new lover, a young woman who's in some action TV series. And Jean Smart has a team of new writers with her. And she has been turned down for a late night show. But she gets an opportunity to guest host that show, but she needs a better writer. And so they take steps towards maybe starting to work together again. I would think that, I don't know, I haven't seen it, so it's not a spoiler alert. Obviously, she's got to go back to work for her full time, right? Otherwise, there's no season. They can only text each other for so long before it gets kind of dull. But so it's off to a little time, just a little bit of a slower start. But the chemistry is still there, and I cannot wait to watch the rest of it. It's laugh out loud, funny at times, just utterly charming in others. So it's called Hacks, H-A-C-K-S, and it's available on Crave. You want to watch it. You guys watching anything?
Well, I'm still working through Ted Lasso. I have half a season left, and then it'll all be done. But I thought I'd
We got, you know, you got a full-time job, yeah. Plus you're driving Uber Eats.
Yep, part-time job.
When does a girl have time to watch a lot of TV?
That's what I'm saying. So I am going to do a little bit of a binge from a while ago, and I wonder if this brings back any memories for our listeners.
Of course. I had a kind of a crush on the dark-haired girl.
Which one? Joe?
And all my buddies at the time said, yeah, it figures, you like the nasty women. I had a thing back then that I was attracted to people who weren't very nice.
Okay.
I resolved it over the years, as you can attest to, because you met my...
Your wife is lovely, yeah.
My wife, she's she was very busy the night I met her, though, and I may have mistaken that for not nice.
Ooh, maybe. Maybe that's what got you hooked.
Got me hooked, and then it was too late to find out she was actually not mean.
Yeah, there you go. But no, this show, Facts of Life, is about Miss Edna Garrett, who's a house mother and dietitian at Eastland School. She teaches a group of girls how to go through life. It's a very coming of age TV series, and it's by far one of my favorite recommendations from my mother. It aired in 1979 through 1988, and it was one of the longest running sitcoms back in the 1980s.
So you were not alive when it ended?
No, it was very much instilled in me and my sister that we had to go and watch this children's show that dealt with a wide variety of very controversial issues for kids to be watching, like, you know, losing virginity, some racism, sexual assault, a plethora of other crazy other things. But definitely good to go back and rewatch it recently and to see what was acceptable to teach our kids every day. But I don't think some of that subject matter would fly in today's day and age. There's 9 seasons of it. And actually, you can watch one of the first seasons on CTV. If you download the CTV app, it's in their throwback section. So you can watch it there.
And I'm trying to figure out whatever happened to Joe, Nancy McKeon.
Yeah, me too. I don't know actually what happened to.
Did she? I don't know that I've really seen her since.
Yeah, I don't see that she's been in much recently. No, it just seems to be Facts of Life and the reunion and nothing that stands out to me.
Oh, she's in a show from 2021.
Oh.
Named Panic.
Nope.
An American teen drama. I bet she's not the teenager.
No. Maybe not in this one. No.
Starring Olivia Welch, Mike Feist, I don't know any of these people, on Amazon Prime.
There you go.
It's the summer after their senior year. 23 graduates participate in the annual Panic competition. Winning Panic with a cash prize of $50,000 will allow them to escape their small Texas town of Carp and then move to the Ontario town of Carp.
There you go.
But I don't know what that is, Panic.
Maybe I'll check it out, too, and that'll be a binge another day.
I just want to see what she looks like now a little older.
One season on Amazon Prime, so it probably wasn't very good.
You didn't get picked up again, is what you're saying?
One and done.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out, if she was in the 70s, she must be in her 60s now, do you think?
Yeah. I have it here. She's 58 years old is what it says.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, that's a memory you brought back there. PJ, anything you want to...
Well, I haven't had a lot of time to watch a lot of shows lately, and I know I feel bad not bringing anything to the table, but my show is a little bit newer than Katie's show, if that helps.
Just a tad.
But after Curb, we have been talking about Curb so much, I was sad that it ended. I was like, okay, I need
to Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yeah, sorry. Okay. Yeah, the kids call it Curb.
You get paid by the word. You can call it the whole thing if you want.
I was sad that it ended, so I went back and I'm watching Seinfeld from episode 1. I'm paying attention to every episode, and it is better than I liked in the past, but I still don't find it as funny as, like, a lot of people give it credit for. And I used to really dislike Jerry Seinfeld. I almost said Springer there, but I actually like Jerry Seinfeld more my second time through and don't like Kramer and... I'm drawing a blank on Larry David's character.
George Costanza.
George Costanza, yeah. I'm actually not liking their characters as much as I did the first time, like when I watched it as a kid. So I'm liking Seinfeld more than I did, you know, so it's kind of reversed for me.
But. I know it was so of its time, though, right? The jokes were very much of that era. It'd be interesting to go back and watch some of it and see if I still found it funny. I watched the first couple of episodes of Friends recently, just... clicking around, there was nothing on, and I watched the pilot, and then the next episode, and I still laughed a couple of times at Friends. So yeah. I don't know if I'd still laugh at Seinfeld.
Today is actually the 20th anniversary of the finale of Friends.
Is that right? 20 years.
May 6th.
6:47. 10 degrees. I'm not letting you depress me anymore. We're moving on The Morning Rush.
Medical myth busting with Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good morning, Doc. Ready to scare the hell out of people this morning?
Let's not try to do that today.
Okay, let's not. But the headlines, it would be getting more and more attention. H5N1 bird flu has, according to many experts, pandemic potential. And the question asked in this headline this morning, which we're asking you, is how likely is the worst case scenario to happen? These are tricky things to predict. I understand that. But... you know, now that it's spread to U.S. cattle, it's getting a lot of attention. And there has been human cases of it, so it's not like it hasn't spread to humans, but so far that hasn't taken hold. How concerned should we be about this?
Well, I think we know the flu is a highly mutatable virus. It does tend to adapt. And it's a couple of mutations away from being able to stick to our respiratory tract. That's the key thing why people don't really catch it so easily. Is that it doesn't really bind to anything that's in the upper airway. So it doesn't stick in your body per se.
So you can inhale it, exhale it, nothing happens.
Yeah, it doesn't really. Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's exactly right. So that's why they're monitoring this to see when that happens, because that's the issue, is that it's certainly possible that it's going to mutate and be able to infect humans much more efficiently. And I think the more exposure, I think it's a question of the more exposure people have, and especially if you have a lot of cattle and other animals where people are around quite frequently, there's more of a possibility of that occurring. So that is the concern, and that they're the whole issue is to monitor to see when and if that happens, and then what you do after that. That's the issue. You can develop a vaccine for this. So it's not as if this is something that's going to be strange to be able to create, right? We make flu vaccines all the time. So that is something that can be done. So there's that to keep in mind, that if there is an outbreak, it's a question of having something readily available to protect people when that happens.
So how did the 800 or so human infections happen if it doesn't stick to your lungs?
Well, there's always the amount of virus that you're exposed to, the amount that gets into your body. So there's nothing that's 100% of anything or 0% of anything, right? The virus is going to infect some people sometimes, but the issue is, how well does it transmit from one person to another? So these individuals were in contact with animals and animal populations that had a lot of the virus, right? So chickens and other birds and cattle. So that's the issue, is that you're stepping into a room that's filled the brim with virus. So just by the force of nature, it ends up causing some illness. But if you're around other people, or a person that has this virus, it doesn't have the potential, because of the amount that's around, to really make you sick. So that's, I think, how we have to look at that. It's being hit with a hammer versus, you know, feathers floating around you. It's very different.
So before I tell you what the death rate for those 800 human beings were, I think we should point out that I think we learned, you and I together, Doc,
yeah,
during COVID, that people calculate risk in very interesting ways. I remember when it was estimated, because we saw different estimates at different times during the last pandemic, about the death rate. And people would say, well, let's say it's 1%. I got a 99% chance of surviving. And I would ask people, so you're about to get on a plane. There are 300 passengers on board, and they tell you there'll be a hijacking, and three of you will be murdered, and five of you will be serious injured. Would you get on that plane? And they all answered, no. Well, why are you getting on the COVID plane if you can avoid it? So different ways to calculate risk. This is roughly 50% fatal. That's a huge number. Now we get into this idea of how does a virus spread? If it's too fatal too quickly, it doesn't have a chance to spread. So there's this sweet spot, or maybe we should call it the sour spot, where the virus spreads easily, is very deadly, but not deadly enough that it sort of stops itself in its tracks. Do we have an idea about what this would, how this would behave, or because it hasn't mutated that way yet, we just can't know?
So I think part of the issue is the denominator that's used for determining the death rate is probably underestimated, meaning that the death rate is probably much lower than that. A part of it is that a lot of people, if they have been exposed, really don't get overly sick. And so you don't know the true number of people that have actually been exposed to this virus and just, you know, it was water off their back. They really, there was nothing that happened to them. So we won't know the true death rates until there is true transmission between person to person. So but I don't think it'll be 50%. I think that it's a major overestimation of the death rate, just because if you're basing that number on the number of cases that you have measured, and your measurements have only focused on people that were really sick, you have a selection bias. And so you need to.
So the 400 of 800 died, but the 800 were the ones sick enough to get on our radar. There may have been people walking around coughing and sneezing by the thousands that we don't know.
Correct.
About.
That's exactly right. So I think that this, I don't think we should be overly dependent on this number as the harbinger of if we get this is going to wipe out half the population. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, does it feel inevitable to you that it will make that switch and we'll see it widespread in humans?
I think historically, if we look at how the flu viruses have behaved, I think it likely is something that is going to happen. Yeah. To what degree? Don't know. But the fact that they are watching this now and that they're concerned about that means that they are concerned that it is going to flip over into humans. I mean, if it's affecting other mammals, right? If it's affecting cattle, then we are mammals. And if it mutated for cattle, it can certainly mutate for people.
And humans spend a lot of time around cattle.
Around cattle, exactly. So that's the issue. So something to watch. But there, as I mentioned, there are vaccines that they can make fairly rapidly. Whether people will take those vaccines,
yes,
as if we circle around to what you said at the beginning, is another issue.
Good luck even getting people to stay home next time around.
Yeah, I think if the death rates are high for this and it's reported like that, that will likely influence behavior. If it's the death rates are what we see with our regular flus, probably won't budge the needle at all.
Or even COVID death rates, which were higher than the flus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think people really have to see it everywhere they go in their neighborhood before they'd respond.
Yeah, I think that's what it'll take.
Yeah, well, we can close our eyes now to how busy it is in hospitals, that we've just become accustomed to that. And, you know, there are very important questions about the damage we did to our economy last time and how much are you willing to repeat that too. It's not going to be easy if this comes very quickly on the heels of COVID. You'd think it'd be easier because of what we just learned, but I think the opposite is true.
Yeah.
Thank you, Doc. You have a good day.
Thanks, you too, Bill.
Medical Myth Busting with Dr. Barry Dworkin, host of House Calls, Sundays at 11 on this station and on iHeartRadio, where you can go and just type in CFRA and you can find this segment we just did and any others. If you missed Hot Takes right after 6 o'clock news, you can find it there. You can listen. You can share it. iHeartRadio app. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
Stay. I want you, I need you, oh God.
Listen anytime, anywhere, through your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Now, the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll continues on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Good morning. It's 7:08 on this Monday morning. Nice to have a couple of days off. Even nicer to be back. Hope you're having a great day. It looks kind of nice out there. A couple of nice days to take advantage of. But I have to get to this. This is something I knew was going to happen. I knew we were going to see what happened in the United States spread to Canada. I'm not surprised that Montreal was where we first saw it. And now we're seeing it in Ottawa as well. These university protests, campus protests, that are, what do we call them? Pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas. That's the problem. It's difficult to know exactly what to call them. So why are people so willing to go out there and express their support for something that's very complicated and most likely very negative?
Sound off at 7.
Did someone conveniently erase October the 7th? From the memories of people we see gathering on our university campuses and in our streets in recent weeks? Did someone conveniently erase that? I don't know how you put on a keffiyeh and you join a protest when this latest round of ugliness began with a deliberate attempt to break a tenuous ceasefire that was going on in Gaza Strip. And Israel was working towards peace agreements with other Arab nations. And suddenly, Hamas decides to launch a terror attack on innocent civilians in Israel. Out of nowhere. One of the reasons they could get through the wall over the fence so easily was Israel had kind of let their guard down. They're thinking things are going a little bit better. Now, if you want to recognize things still weren't going well for the Palestinian people, I think that's a fair point. But does it justify mass murder and rape? And how do those students that we see on our campuses, some of them are filled with anti-Semitism. That's obvious when you hear them speak. Many others are just misguided, convenient idiots who are out there supporting a cause that they clearly don't fully understand. Because if you fully understood what was happening in that part of the world, your first instinct should be, oh, that's complicated. I want to be very careful here about taking sides. That should be your first instinct. I'm not surprised that these kinds of protests are popping up on campuses. Now the universities are reaping what they've sown, right? That's they're saying, wow, what do you mean invested in Israel? How are we supposed to unwind that? Our investments are beyond our control. We just send the money and they're part of other bigger investments. And we can't separate any money that may or may not support Israel. There's no way to do that. But your students have turned on you. This is the education you've given them. An education that allows them to hear half a story and take to the streets or occupy your campus. This is exactly what these universities deserve. I'm not even in favor of breaking them up right away. I agree in a democracy that people are allowed to make you feel uncomfortable. They're allowed to fracture a couple of laws when it's an important enough issue. That law is designed that someday when a government takes control that is not democratic, that is not following our constitution and our rules, refuses to step down from office, we can take to the streets. Now, under those circumstances, the government probably wouldn't care about what our rights were. But in a democracy, people have a right to make you feel a little bit inconvenient. That doesn't bother me. Summer is here. I'm sure that's great timing for them. I want to sleep in a tent, and the weather is becoming nice. I wonder how many would have started in January if that were the case. And they say they're in it for the long haul, but how many will be there when the first snow falls? If, in fact, the campus doesn't ask police to remove them before then. But I saw members of our public sector union, a head of our public sector union out there this weekend as well. Is this where you stand as a public sector worker? Do you stand by the organization that brought us October the 7th and mass murder and rape? Is that what you stand for? Because I saw one of your leaders wearing a keffiyeh out there talking about it, taking your support with him, your backing out with him to the university campus. Well, there goes your union dues, right? That's what your union dues now support. How do you feel about that one? Are you angry? Maybe you need to express that to your leadership. If you're not, did someone conveniently erase October 7th from your mind as well? Did someone conveniently make a very complicated issue very simple for you? Or is somewhere at the heart of it all just anti-Semitism? I don't know. These are all valid questions, though. All questions that we ask when we see you on those university campuses, where many of the people who are there conveniently cover their faces, some of them with medical masks. If this is what you believe, if you have nothing to hide, why the fear? If this isn't threatening and menacing and supporting terrorism, why hiding your identity? Yeah, it's very confusing, very depressing for me. It's discouraging about where we find ourselves, that people don't stop to think about what they're actually saying when they go out on the streets to protest. These are the same people who were so angry during the trucker protest that because a couple of swastikas showed up, all of the thousands of people who were on Parliament Hill were suddenly Nazis. So you judge the truckers by the swastikas? What? How do you separate yourself from the most evil part of Hamas when you're at these protests, when you're out there willing to take part in it? I don't understand why this is so easy for you. I really don't. I would also ask you this question. Will you turn down your pension? How much money is invested in your government pension? Since your union leadership is out there supporting this protest and they want the universities to pull their money out of Israel, and the universities are saying, well, it's complicated. We don't directly invest in Israel, but we invest in funds that may have investments in Israel. It's really difficult to unwind. How do you think your pension works? Are you going to refuse to take it when you retire? Are you going to refuse to take any money from governments that are invested in countries like Israel? Are you going to do that? Here's one thing I know for sure. You better turn down your Canada pension plan when the time comes. You don't think it's invested in the same way universities are? So when the time comes, if these protests become too disruptive and the protesters have to be removed, I would tell the university that it needs to suspend, ultimately remove every one of those students from their classes, from their courses. You can't, without being unbelievably hypocritical, without scoring a complete victory here, and you're not going to, without scoring a complete victory, you can't go back to that university in that class and allow Israel to pay for your education, can you? Anyway, it shouldn't matter because you should be asked to leave the university. You should be expelled. It's as simple as that. If you don't leave when you're asked to leave, we're at that stage right now at McGill. Maybe we won't reach that stage here in Ottawa. We'll see. Perhaps people will behave well there, but that hasn't been the history of some of these protests so far, and time will tell. But how do you just forget about October 7th, erase that from history, and make a judgment about Israel's right to defend itself and how far it must go? Somehow you've managed it. I guess that's how human beings justify their existence. We conveniently forget things. It's 7:16. It's the Morning Rush.
On the go, take News Talk 580 CFRA Ottawa with you. Download, listen, and learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll.
There's no doubt a lot of governments around the world are starting to hesitate in their support for Israel because they see people on the streets and they're afraid. They're afraid to lose votes, our country particularly so, but it's not going to have any effect on Israel. The Prime Minister there, Benjamin Netanyahu, is vowing to resist all the international pressure. He says the war with Hamas and its militants will go on in Gaza until Hamas is no longer capable of coming back. He says there's no amount of pressure from foreign countries or organizations will stop that from happening.
I pledge here today from Jerusalem on this Holocaust Remembrance Day, if Israel is forced to stand alone, Israel will stand alone.
He's under pressure from hardliners at home as well and inside his government to escalate the war. Perfect example of that, on the weekend I saw tweets from people saying, inside his government, saying, look what just happened. We open up a border crossing, the same crossing, by the way, where the October 7th militants, murderers, rapists came across and attacked innocent civilians. They reopened it to allow humanitarian aid in. You know what happened? Gaza fired rockets at it, killing members of the, and where's the outrage about that this morning? Israel says it accidentally killed humanitarian aid workers, and it's a story for weeks, and now this, there's no outrage about it. Anyway, Hamas fired rockets, killing people, and closing the border again, stopping humanitarian aid from getting to its own people, the people it says it's fighting for. So with that, hardliners in the government were saying, have you learned enough yet? Have you learned enough? There's nothing else we could do but wipe out Hamas. And that seems to be what he plans to do. He says, yes, there's one last enclave, and they will go there to do what they have to do. He invoked the Holocaust Remembrance slogan, never again, comparing last year's attack, the conveniently erased October 7th by some, to the concentration camps of the Second World War.
We will defeat our genocidal enemies. Never again is now.
So you may see some weakness or lack of resolve in his position. I'm certainly not seeing it. And like I said, he's being squeezed on both sides in Israel. So it's not like there isn't an active democratic attempt to get him to finish off what he started and for others say, we need to back down. We need a ceasefire right now. But once again, the negotiations to release the hostages seems to have broken down. And it's not helpful. See, you have to ask yourself, does an organization like Hamas really want a ceasefire for humanitarian aid to come in when humanitarian aid is coming in and then they stop it by firing rockets at it and killing people? What is it they really want? What they really want is more useful idiots to go out to campuses and out on the streets and put more pressure on more governments to isolate Israel. That's what they really want. And it doesn't appear they care how many of their own people die in the process. Otherwise, why do what they did this weekend? It makes no sense in any other context, does it? 7:27, 10 degrees, it's the Morning Rush.
I got a job that pays all my bills. We stay out drinking late at the bar. See more of your friends than you do your kids.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Seven 7:34, starting to warm up already. 11 degrees right now. Hope you're having a good Monday. Sadly, the rest of the world is still doing what the rest of the world does. I have to tell you, I took a couple of days off last week from reading what was going on in the world. Not totally. You know, I kind of paid attention to the headlines. Still read about things that I was interested in, but I just tried to avoid it all. It's really depressing what's going on in the world right now. The way our economy is lumbering along and interest rates and protests on the streets. What's going on in Gaza is, of course, terrible. No matter which side you find yourself on, it's just... Well, I think some are actually cheering and want the blood and the violence because they want to isolate Israel in the world. But whatever your position on it is, you got to admit it's all kind of depressing. And things in Gaza may get worse before they get better. Israel is intent on attacking Rafah, and they say it's sort of the final holdout of Hamas. And they're not going to stop until Hamas has been rooted out so it can't come back and do exactly what it's done in the past, including the events of October 7th, the terrible attacks that day. Retired Major General David Fraser is CTV's military analyst, joins us to talk about the situation. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to hear you.
Good to have you back on. Do you have clearer information yet about what happened this weekend with a border crossing in Israel, which Hamas says they attacked a military facility next to it, and Israel says, no, you're trying to stop humanitarian aid, and then, you know, you're firing from behind civilians. Israel counterattacked that. More people died. What's your understanding of what exactly happened there?
Well, I think it's a bad ending to a negotiations that were ongoing at the time that we were all led to believe there was actually some progress, and including the fact that you had the CIA director directly involved. You had the Secretary of State weighing in for the first time and repeatedly on urging both sides to come to some sort of solution. We were led to believe that, and all of a sudden, what happens? We see that Hamas fires off a bunch of rockets, kill three Israeli soldiers. The Israelis now, it just all ended really poorly, and it just set the stage for what we're going to see this week, which is the attack into Rafah.
Yeah, and it's if you believe what Israel's saying, they're saying Hamas is just, they refuse to accept any kind of deal that means Israel has a right to eliminate them, that they want to remain in power. Not surprising, though, is it?
It's not surprising. And, you know, it begs the bigger question, what happens after the war? You know, what is going to be the governance structure inside of Gaza? And, you know, at some stage in the game, you know, Israel is going to have to reconcile politically what they are going to do with Hamas. You know, and we don't even know what the plan is just for the basic governance structure. And this is going to be the key to the long-term, you know, future of Gaza is what happens after the war, not just the fighting.
Meanwhile, people are being told by Israel to get out of neighborhoods in Rafah. I think we've been feeling like an invasion or an attack there was imminent for some weeks now. Is it getting closer, do you think?
Absolutely. And this is the biggest indicator that, you know, the attack is imminent. You know, for the last couple of weeks, we've seen a couple of Israeli divisions getting ready for attacks, which means they're getting rearmed, maintenance, doing preparations and rehearsals. But, you know, the biggest indicator is not just what happened on the weekend with the attack, killing of three Israeli soldiers, but to your point, that the local civilians have been told to get out of the city. And because of that, the attack will be imminent. And unfortunately, you and I are going to be talking in the days to come about innocent casualties as a result of that.
How much of Hamas is hiding in that city? Do we have any idea?
I don't think we have any idea, but in fact, there will be an awful lot of Hamas hiding in the city. But they keep squirting out to other parts of Gaza. They continue to fire rockets at Israel from all parts of Gaza. And but Israel has been consistent and determined to go through Gaza completely and rubbling it in their pursuit of Hamas. And this is the last little piece of Gaza where the Israelis have yet to go to, so we can expect them to go there. And the results will be a lot of dead people and a lot of rubbled buildings.
You know, I've been supportive of Israel's right to defend itself from the beginning of this and blame Hamas for the civilian deaths when they hide behind civilians. But practically speaking, is it possible to wipe out Hamas? I mean, even if Israel occupies that territory, they're just going to keep popping up. Would it not be better to leave them one last enclave in Rafah and take control of the rest of the city, start to rebuild it? I'm no expert, obviously, but it seems to me that Israel counterattacked after October 7th with no real plan, and maybe an intention they'd come up with one all along. Maybe they haven't. We don't know. But I just don't know how you manage to root out all of Hamas. And there are going to be a lot of angry people left in Gaza after the fighting stops who've lost loved ones. So no end of new recruits.
Bill, you know, first of all, this war started because Hamas attacked on the 7th of October. They perpetrated all these actions. Israel had the right to defend itself, and they did attack because they had to attack to, you know, go after those people that killed all those Israelis. Now, how much is enough? I think, you know, the world is now expressing a lot of disappointment on both sides because the fighting has gone on way too long, and, what, 35,000 people have been killed, and they're not fighters. But to your point, you cannot destroy an ideology. Destruction of Hamas is impossible as a political objective, even a tactical objective. But putting that aside, you got to get the hostages back. You got to end the fighting at some stage. And it goes back to what is the plan after the fighting is over? How do you reconcile two organizations, the people living in Gaza and the Israelis, to live side by side so the fighting doesn't carry on in perpetuity? We don't know what that is, so I think the Israeli prime minister needs to articulate what is the plan, because the fighting right now is just purely tactical, but has no strategic end state.
Yeah, I don't know. On the surface, it seems like the plan is when Hamas and its leadership is severely crippled, let's say you can accomplish that, that all of the energy goes into rebuilding Gaza Strip, and so there's not much energy left for attacking Israel, that's maybe the short-term solution they see to the problem. Whether that works or not, I don't know. I mean, attempts to build infrastructure in Gaza end up with more rockets being built instead of more plumbing being laid, right?
Absolutely, and that's the issue. I mean, you know, and the more people you kill, probably the more that you instill people to stand up for Hamas, because, you know, they're angry with all the innocents that have been killed. But at the same time, you know, Israel has a right to protect its own citizens against the terrorist organization called Hamas. The only way this thing is reconciled is you get them both around the table to somehow come to an accommodation on both sides where they can live with each other as opposed to killing each other.
But both sides have to be ready to do that. I think Israel, we saw peace agreements being made with Arab nations before October the 7th, and Israel seems to be willing to live with its neighbors, but I'm not sure Hamas wants to live with Israel. It's not about a two-state solution for members of Hamas. It's a one-state solution, and that doesn't include Israel.
And neither side has shown a willingness to compromise on trying to find some sort of reconciliation. I mean, we had that brief ceasefire there for a while, but both sides are just seem to be doggedly determined on their positions and not willing to negotiate off those positions, which means the fighting just carries on and innocent people die on both sides of the fence. So it's just, it's really disappointing. But until those leaders on both sides figure out that they are going to come to some sort of political solution, there's not much hope.
So what does a final attack on Rafah look like? Is it mass bombing from the air first, rocket launches, and then a ground assault, or will it be something slower, more door-to-door, street-by-street?
It'll be very slow and street-by-street, building-by-building, room-by-room. The use of drones, the use of precision-guided munitions, the use of special forces, but it's going to be very slow, very methodical, because of the density of the buildings, the density of innocent civilians, and also the, you know, international pressure. Israel is going to have to be very careful. They don't raise any more criticisms against them about how they've been prosecuting operations in urban areas. So this is not going to happen quickly. It's going to be a very slow and drawn-out process. And the more they can get civilians out of the way, the better it will be for everybody.
Well, that process, like we said, has already started. Israel warning people to get out of some neighborhoods. So looks like whatever they're planning for Rafah might be just around the corner, maybe even by the time this show is over. Thanks for your time again, David. Appreciate it.
You know, always. Thank you.
Retired Major General David Fraser, CTV's military analyst. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
I was trying to get my head wrapped around this situation and the battle and the diss tracks. And I just said, the minute I understand this is the day that I will do it for trending. And sadly, that is just not today. I will try hard, I promise. But yeah, there's no explaining
that. I think I might have understood it if I'd actually read the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw it's about, does Drake have a daughter that he doesn't
know
take
his,
credit for and yeah. pay for? And it's Kendrick Lamar, I think, is who he's feuding with.
Yes.
And they drop tracks attacking each other on the same day. And I don't know. The whole thing kind of feels like it's convenient for both of them to get attention. I don't know if I'm buying it as a real feud.
No, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. But
yeah. I mean, I'm kind of happy you're not talking about that. But, you know, I thought you might because you wouldn't
trending.
Be wrong. It's everywhere.
Yeah, it is absolutely trending. But I decided to go on a different approach because this has to be my favorite video that I've seen this weekend. And it's about a little girl that loves to do impressions, right? Plenty of children love to talk like animals. They talk about their favorite animals. But there is one girl that's blown them all out of the water. 5-year-old Riley lives with her mom, Amy, in Scotland. And she has found herself going viral for a lion roar impression that is so good, so many people believe it to be fake. Here's Riley.
Right. Do you know that so many people loved your lion noise yesterday? They thought that your lion noise was really good. Everyone thought it sounded so real.
It is real.
It is real? How did you get so good at that noise?
I can't
do it. How can you do that?
We may get some air and blow. You need to practice. I am an expert.
You need to practice. She is an expert.
You need to get some air and blow.
Right? Come on, obviously. And
very simple. But it's not. Is that a roar or more of a lion growl?
It makes sense to be a growl.
More of a growl to me.
Play part two, BJ. It's more of a growl, right? It's not.
But how does that deep a sound come out of that little body?
She is 5 years old. She's very, very teeny tiny. And she's got over 16 million views on that video now. And people are convinced that she is just posting clips of a lion growl or roar, whatever it may be, on top of this little body, making, you know, opening her mouth just at the perfect time. And people are trying to do it themselves. Some people in the comment section saying that this made me puke trying to imitate that. The instructions aren't clear enough. Riley, please go into further detail on how you do this roar other than get some air and blow.
Can she do any others?
She actually can.
Can you make any other animal sounds?
Oh, I can. Yes, I can. I did it with how my horse sounded. Ready, hear it? It's not perfect.
It's not perfect?
Yeah.
So what are you going to do?
Keep practicing and more to get better.
Now,
what's that one supposed to be?
That one's a horse. It's a little more rough, you know, but she's working on it. She's
a little bit of a neigh in there, I guess. Play it again.
A pony?
Can you make any other...
Oh, I can. Yes, I can. I did it with how my horse sounded. Ready, hear it?
It's not perfect.
It's not perfect.
Try it again.
So what are you going to do?
Keep practicing and more to get better.
Second one was good.
Like a pony, right? Like maybe a little horsey.
Okay, can you do a lion roar?
Me? I mean, I was trying over the weekend, but it wasn't going very well. But if I'm trying to do it like her with the growl, play part two, PJ. that's the best I got. There you go. That was pretty good. PJ, what do you got?
Nope, I'm not doing it.
What?
Come on, PJ.
My hands
you have a little girl. You
out.
Must do some animal sounds.
I do with her. Yeah, she roars. Yeah.
Well, come on. Let's hear one.
No, I can't. No.
Can you do a dog? I used to be able to do a dog. I don't know if I still can.
Oh,
that's good. Yeah, that's going to send all the dogs going crazy. Yeah.
That's actually really good.
Thank you.
Wow, that's impressive. But no, I can't. That's okay. I mean, the thing is, it makes sense if you...
It sounds too much like a person when I do it. It does not sound like a person when... The Wii like does it.
It sounds like she's got like a lung infection. You know, when
that's
you
what I'm worried about.
Yeah, you got like.
I'm worried that
cough.
She needs a medical check.
Yeah, somebody check up on Riley.
And then you got the hiss after even her mom's laugh. When you're struggling to breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that mom has a bit of a wheezy lung problem there too. You might be right. The whole household has TB.
There you go. But this unusual talent, right? I mean. Is this going to lead her into a career of doing sound effects? Maybe not, but a lot of people are convinced that this is fake. But I can hear it a bit that it sounds real and not just a voice effect or a sound over, like a voiceover. But I don't know.
Will you put that on our social media so people can link to it?
Absolutely. Go check out Riley and her mom's. They're a cute little TikTok account where they post updates. But now she's been getting more attention for her animal noises. I'll let you know if she has any new animal noises that she adds to the repertoire.
Last trending we did together was the...
Lions and tigers and bears, oh my.
Running into a bear versus a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, on Friday, it was still trending.
It was the number one trending on Twitter, yes.
And all the other radio morning shows, as I was driving, were just picking up on it and asking the question. Katie, you were way out ahead on that.
Hey, I do what I can. I do what I can.
This is Gail Lewis, 10-year associate, Morris, Illinois, 844.
I'll never forgive her for that one.
That is another trending that I did that you guys didn't believe was trending, and it ended up being pretty big. So there you go.
Which one was that?
That was Gail Lewis talking about her sign-off from Walmart. It was
this
a couple months
Gail Lewis, 10-year associate, Morris, Illinois, 844.
That's clearly one of PJ's favorite trendings.
Signing
I don't know.
Off.
There you go.
No, still can't do
that
it.
That was better.
Better?
Yeah.
My dog barking scared my lion impression off.
Fair enough.
It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. Coming up after the 8 o'clock news. Are you being overwhelmed with spam texts? And I would add to that calls. It was annoying when they call you at home. It is infuriating when they get me on my cell. And really, it doesn't cost me anything anymore to take the incoming call. Used to, but it still bothers me more. And I think I know why. But anyway, we're going to talk about that and where we're going with it and what we can do to protect ourselves with Claudia Popa, certified security and privacy expert, author of Canadian Cyber Fraud Handbook. Help it. I want every bit of you.
I guess I'm selfish. Welcome back to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
You noticing an increase in spam? Why does it bother me more? I noticed the number of phone calls that I'm getting has gone down a little bit, but the number of texts has gone way up. I guess they figured out a lot of us just don't answer our phone. I had to say to my daughter this weekend, she's got a resume or two out there, you know, trying to find a summer job. And she blocks any unknown number. If it's a number that is not in her contacts, you can't get through. I said, well, how are people supposed to call you back? Good point. It's just the kids don't answer the phone. I occasionally do, but even now I'm starting to let stuff go through the voicemail. So they figured that out, and now they're sending texts. I feel like I get one at least every day now. And the stats seem to back that up. The experts are saying, yeah, the number of complaints we're getting has gone up, and you're not alone. Claudia Popa is a certified security and privacy expert, as well as author of the Canadian Cyber Fraud Handbook. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks for having me on the show again.
You know, I was trying to figure out why it bothers me more when I get a call or something at home. Why it bothers me more when it's on my cell phone, whether I'm at home or not. My cell phone feels like it's part of me now. And when someone texts me and I'm at a friend's house or I'm at work or whatever, it feels like an even bigger invasion. Like they're following me everywhere I go. And I know I'm not paying extra for it, but it just bothers me. There's something about the fact that they can get to me, even if I'm not at home anymore, bothers me more. Does that make sense to you?
Well, absolutely. It's an invasion of your personal space. The fact that you're carrying the phone and you're performing that service for the scammers doesn't necessarily register. But the fact that it comes in when we're doing something else and then imposes on our time is really irritating. That's really why there are fewer calls and more text scams that are coming through. They realize that people are irritated by default when you call them up and force them into a conversation. Also,
remember when people got so mad that Apple teamed up with U2 and they put their latest album into your music catalog free, and you know, it didn't cost anything, but people were offended because it felt like you came into my house and put a CD in my collection. That's not what it was, but that's how it felt. So people are very defensive about it. I know it's just not me. How sophisticated are these attacks? Sometimes even I get tempted to click on it. I got one, I think, Friday that was pretty obviously fake, where it says, hey, I forgot to send you that money. Send me your address again, and I'll send it right back to you. And like, there's no one out there that owes me money. I'm not falling for that. Others, you go, is it possible that Canada Post has a parcel and I should click on this to find out more? There's that little bit of doubt, right?
All of these are psychological tricks, and they run the gamut from the simple ones to the most complex ones that actually use names they found in your Facebook friends list. So they obviously go from them being just generic and untargeted to being finely tuned to your network. So my first recommendation is don't allow those simple ones that you can easily detect to skew your own assessment of your own capabilities, because they can easily build a false sense of security. And so you should be suspicious when you get simple ones, because they're typically followed by much more complicated ones that you might not be so skeptical about.
Are you done the minute you open it, or can you open it and delete it and be okay as long as you don't respond to it?
There are two kinds of text messages and, as you probably know, email phishing scams. The ones that are the most dangerous are the ones that you open and your phone gets infected. The second type are the ones that play the long game, and they want to groom you into a relationship. And they say, you know, my husband died and I've had to find a new hobby, and so on and so forth. They give you a sob story and they rope you into a conversation where you're sharing some information about yourself. But generally speaking, they usually start with some kind of knowledge about their audience, even though it might not be specific to your own life.
What if you've opened one and then realized, oh, this is not good? I wonder if I've already let the wolf in the door. What's the first thing you do?
You look for suspicious behavior on your phone. If it looks like something has changed, if you've got delays, if you have a new pop-up that says it's requesting access to your address book or your microphone or your camera, that's an indication that something is in the process of installing itself. It may not already have installed itself, but chances are attackers may occasionally have access to tools that will allow them to breach your phone's defenses. That's why we saw last year, thousands of 5,400 reports of malicious text messages at the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. And it's got to be significant enough for people to take the time to report them, because sometimes they have to wait online to speak with someone. So if it's a concern, by all means, report it and get some tips from the people who record the event on your behalf.
I'm going to test just how far you go with cybersecurity. Do you put a piece of tape over your camera?
I put 4 pieces of tape over my phone camera, because I discovered that when you completely block the phone camera, it dims the screen. And so the phone actually uses your camera to detect the ambient light and determines whether it's in the dark or not. So this way, you're allowing light to pass through, but not see the image of you at all times, really. You're just carrying this thing around all day long, so you never know what it is filming. So by all means, tried to make it translucent, but not necessarily opaque, so that the phone doesn't, behave differently. That's a good
question. So then, like, sort of blurry images of my naked fat self are going to show up on the internet and not, oh, that's Bill Carroll.
It doesn't even have to be blurry at all. It literally has to just allow light. It should allow no shapes. So
really?
When you and you can,
why doesn't some can, maybe they do. Does someone make that specifically to fit over your phone? Because I see people with their iPads and stuff, this big ugly piece of electrical tape, and I think, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, you can get those awkward little plastic slider windows. In some cases, those prevent your laptop from closing properly. The ones on tablets seem to work okay. But you absolutely don't need to buy one. You can simply use a sticker or just transparent tape. And like I say, you just keep on adding layers until only light gets through and you don't see shapes. You can, of course, turn on the camera in selfie mode to see what the thing can see.
What if I put on the back, the sticky side of the tape, the downside of the tape, an image of a really hot naked guy, totally buff, with my face on it, and people will think that's me. Would that work?
Great idea.
Is that possible, or could it not focus up that close?
It's not possible because, as you say, it can't focus at zero length. But it's an awesome idea, I think. In the future, you could use a hologram so that it looks like it's at a distance.
That's great until you forget to take it off, and then you do a work Zoom call.
Yeah.
And up pops this fake image of you naked. It's probably not going to go well for you. So
people will jump to conclusions, absolutely.
Well, not in my case. I think they would know right away it's Photoshop. But thank you. I wasn't being serious about that. Don't do that now and get fired and then blame me. No. I'm not taking responsibility for it. It's get a sense of humor. Claudio, thank you very much. Good to talk to you again.
All right. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Claudio Popa, a certified security privacy expert, author of The Canadian Cyber Fraud Handbook. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
Hey friends, but I'd like to just be.
Join the conversation on The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll. Text 580-580 right now.
Yeah, I hope when they come to clean out their lockers in Toronto that a lot of people get fired today. If you're a Leaf fan, you're hoping the same thing. Come on, admit it. It's not that I don't like the members of the Core Four. It's just there are too many guys who play the same way, and they're not cut out for playoff hockey. I'm sure some team would be happy to take Mitch Marner. I don't think they'll get as much as they think for him, but I'm sure you'll find he has to agree to be traded is the problem. But I would fire the president, start from there. Shanahan gone, move on. Move on down the line from there, and including the coach. You can't, you know what happened? They count on four players. What happens when two of them get sick or injured? We see it now, right? There's nothing left. It used to be the core four, but now Tavares is so old that he's no longer an elite forward. He's just not. We've seen that. He didn't have a bad season, but he can't skate anymore. He was never a great skater to begin with, and he was just falling apart in the playoffs. Not an impact player at all. And Marner, he's a core four player maybe during the season, but in the playoffs, he just doesn't have it. So the core two, you can't build a team around two players. And what the hell was wrong with Austin Matthews? Maybe we'll find out more about that today too. But he was incredible. That one game he single-handedly won, and then he got sick and or injured. All very weird. And then disappointing as well for the Professional Women's Hockey League team in Ottawa. Yeah, I thought they'd make the playoffs, but they didn't. 5-2 loss against Toronto in the regular season finale. Here's the head coach, Carla McLeod.
There's a lot of emotion. We wanted to get this game. You could see by how we played, we were pretty determined to try to win this one and get our punch our own ticket into the playoffs. So, yeah, it hurts, of course, in the room. It hurts in the coach's room. It hurts in the player's room. But, you know, it's a simple message at the end. Like, we couldn't be more proud of our group.
Yeah, Toronto could have let them win. They were already guaranteed first place. They could have been nice. As if, right? Star forward Sarah Nurse pointed out, though, they intended to make it known they were not letting up despite already securing that top seed. And so Sarah said they played hard.
I think going into this game, understanding that we had a playoff spot, but knowing from here on out, we have to end a team season every time we play them. And so today, that was the first opportunity. Going into this game, we knew that if we won, Ottawa was done. And so that's what we wanted to do, and ultimately send a message to the rest of the league, too, that we're not taking our foot off the gas.
So do we know what the playoff format is in the PWHL? Is it a best of seven? I mean, I just assume so, right? Because there are only four teams. So do you think that Toronto, PWHL Toronto, will get behind in the series and then roar back only to lose in game seven? Like, that's the new Toronto thing? Or will this team actually win and further embarrass the Maple Leafs organization? That's what I'm hoping for.
Best of five.
It's best of five.
Super lame.
What about the final? Is that the finals too?
Yeah, best of five. You have
only two rounds.
I know, you have four teams in the playoffs. Why not just put all six in, do like a play-in? I don't know. Is it really playoffs when there's six teams in the league?
Well, that's what they did in the original six in the NHL.
Yeah, 70 years ago, 80 years ago. That was the last time the Leafs were able to beat Boston.
Yeah. Yep, I reminded my Boston fan friends on the weekend. By the way, you guys have only won one Stanley Cup in 50 years, so maybe you're getting a little cocky there on that. It's not a lot of championships, but get used to it. 32 teams in the NHL, you could go your entire lifetime and never see your team win the Stanley Cup. That's the new reality. That's my life, actually, so far, and I expect one of my friends said he was going to get the Stanley Cup and the Toronto Maple Leafs tattooed onto his arm if they win the Stanley Cup. He said, now they'll have to exhume my body to do it. I said, no, they'll be carving it into what's left of your bones is what they'll be doing. It's 8:30. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. Some binge watch ideas coming up next.
Falling apart right in front of you. Can't you see? I lose.
This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
A lot of talk about bail review while I was away. Pierre Poilievre talking about it and notwithstanding clause and much of it prompted by that terrible wrong way collision on the 401. Police following, I didn't say chasing, that remains to be seen, but following someone who robbed an LCBO. And there are a lot of questions about that. I want to focus on the bail part of it, though, because I think it's important. I agree with Pierre Poilievre that we need bail review in this country. We need to change the way bail is handed out, but I also think it's incredibly complicated and a lot of other things about the justice system would have to change, and a lot of things logistically would have to change as well. For example, where would we put everybody if nobody ever got bail? I don't think anyone's suggesting that, but violent criminals, well, then you got to define violence. And that's not always easy as you think it is. Anyway, I don't have much time here, so we'll take the time to get you up to date with the 9 o'clock news. I'll save it for after 9 o'clock. And then we're going to talk about high-rise building safety. You know, we were talking on the weekend about when we were at Lansdowne, actually, hitting golf balls around, about the condos there, the beautiful condos overlooking the field in that area. Condos are starting to develop, and how we'd like to maybe retire one day in a condo. And I said, yeah, but I don't want to be any higher up than the tallest ladder the fire department has. And maybe in the back of my mind was those two fires we had in the same high-rise building on the weekend. So we're going to talk about high-rise fire safety with Gwen Lewis, the Division Chief of Fire Prevention, after the 9 o'clock news as well. So still got a lot of show ahead of us. Don't go anywhere. It's the Morning Rush.
With Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Terrible tragedy, those family members killed on the 401, a wrong-way collision that started after somebody robbed a liquor store. It seems like it happened in Knife Point. Because you got to imagine that if somebody picks up a bottle of booze and leaves an LCBO, there's no way police are getting involved. They're not going to. It's usually the same people anyway, people who are living on the streets, living downtown, the LCBO staff. don't even try to intervene. It's not worth the risk. They call police. People do get arrested and charged and go before the courts. But so there was something more violent involved here. And did the police chase? They're now saying, no, we were actually following, trying to warn traffic. I don't know how you do that. I'm on the 401 and a car is coming the opposite direction. By the time I see the police cars behind it to warn me, it's already gone past me. A lot of questions to be asked there, but everyone is focusing on bail. So I'll call him in the Sun on the weekend that prompted people to ask what the justice of the peace was thinking, letting this person out on bail in the first place. They did have some interaction with the court, did seem to be out on bail. So that's turned the conversation back to bail reform. Our conservative leader says he'll use the notwithstanding clause to reform our bail system, if that's what he has to do. I agree that we need to reform the bail system. I don't think it's quite as broken as some think it is, but I do think it needs pretty serious repair. But it is incredibly complicated and it's going to be expensive. You better be ready to pay for it. Have you ever spent any time in one of our bail courts? You know, they're open to the public. You could go and do it. I've been spending a lot of time watching it because it's become an issue in the last year or so. And you can do it online through Zoom. You can watch, or you can walk into a courtroom during the week and just walk in and sit down and watch it all transpire. And it's a multi-layered, very difficult set of decisions to get made about whether someone is let go and go back out to live. And they all have different conditions placed upon them. First of all, a lot of people who commit a crime are charged by police and then they make a promise to appear in court and they never see a justice of the peace or a judge. Police let them go right there and then. So do we want to reform that part of the system? It's a good question, right? Other times, and this is the question I haven't seen answered about the situation with this LCBO robber. He was out on bail, but everyone is blaming the justice of the peace. Not everyone, but people are saying, how did this happen? Was the justice of the peace even asked to make a decision about bail? Because often there's an agreement ahead of time between the Crown and the defense to release someone on bail. It's already been decided. Maybe we need to give justice of the peace authority to examine those deals a little more closely, but they could be really complicated. Deals that are made behind the scenes for reasons that the justice of the peace may not see. For example, someone could be a police informant, just as one of many different things. So it could have been, they call it a consent release. So it may not have really. And then if a justice of the peace had seen it and decided to deny the bail, one of the things you have to take into consideration, let's say you rob an LCBO with a knife and you get convicted. You may not go to jail for that. So do we want to lock people up while they're presumed innocent for a crime that might not lead to substantial or any jail time at all? There's just so many factors that have to be considered. It's not so easy to just reform it. Let's say you do, and we start holding every violent criminal in jail until we see they have a complete trial. All the evidence is presented and they're found innocent or we're going to have to live with that, by the way, a lot of lawsuits for people who may have been held for months or longer waiting for a trial. They're ultimately found not guilty. They're going to complain. I've lost my freedom for the last 6 months or a year while waiting this trial, and I was found not guilty. Someone's got to pay for that. So how do you get around that? You have to hire many more justices of the peace, appoint lots more judges. You have to get the justice system to move at a very accelerated pace. That's going to cost a lot of money to do so, and maybe we should spend it. And then you better be willing to build more jails to hold them in while they're waiting for their trial. And you're going to have to hire more jail guards to look after them while they're there. It is an expensive and complicated process to reform the way we do bail in this country. And maybe some of it is more subtle. Like I said, maybe justices of the peace may need to take more of a position on these consent bails. Maybe they need to get more involved and say, I don't care if the Crown and the defense have come up with an agreement here. I'm not going to agree to it. Not without adding an ankle bracelet or not without improving the surety. The surety is the person who says, look, I'll make sure they live by their bail conditions, and if they don't, I'll call you. So if someone has a curfew and let's say you're the parent and you're the surety for your 21-year-old, they're supposed to be home at 10 o'clock at night. They're not home at 10 o'clock at night. You're supposed to call the police. And if you don't do that, you've put up, well, and here's the other thing. This might be a might be another subtle change that would help. We all, I think most Canadians believe that when you're released on bail and they ask you for $5,000, you give them a check for $5,000. You don't show up for your next court date or you break the conditions. We, the public, keep the $5,000. No, it rarely happens that way. First of all, the sums of money are much, much smaller. Nobody's posting $1 million bail and getting a bail bondsman to loan them the money. And then we send some guy who calls himself Dog out there to chase you down to bring you back. It doesn't work that way. Most of the time, you agree, I'll pay $1,000 if they violate the conditions. You don't even write a check. The court will come after you later, maybe, if the conditions are violated. So maybe that should be part of our system. Some will complain it's too much of an Americanization. But maybe if the sureties actually put up real cash, your son is charged or your daughter charged in connection with stealing a car. That's a big deal these days. Most of those kids are let out on bail, but there's an organized crime component to it. Maybe we should be tougher on even nonviolent car theft. But okay, so you're denying bail. Or that's fine, problem solved. Now you have all the other problems, though. They need a speedy trial. Where are you going to house them? All of those issues. Let's say you decide to release them to their parents. They're the surety. If they put up $100,000 up front, 100 grand, which they'll get back when the trial starts or when the trial's over, maybe more of those sureties would drop a dime on their family and friends. So, and there, that's something else we don't know about this case in Oshawa. What kind of bail conditions were there? I haven't seen it. Maybe it's out there now, but I haven't seen it. Did they have a good surety? Was it, I mean, there are differences. You could say, I'm a bike gang member and I've been arrested and I'm being held on bail. My surety is the leader of the local chapter of Hell's Angels. Well, is that a good surety? Meanwhile, my surety might be my friend Chuck Bortolo, the former chief of police. I'm going to be living in his basement. Well, I might trust that. You know, that guy's dropping a dime on me if I don't show up or break the conditions. So it's not easy. What, do we do more ankle bracelets? And even then, that kind of helps you figure out where they were after the fact if they commit another crime. There's no one monitoring you every minute to make sure you don't leave. They're easily removed. So it's a very difficult process. And I'm not hearing anyone suggesting that they've thought it all the way through before saying we need to reform it. Like I said, spend a day in bail court. See how complicated the process is, and then you tell me if it's simply, we need to get tougher. We do need to get tougher. But. And if I were the prime minister of this country, I would address all of those buts. Take the time, do it right. Because I think most of us agree that while a lot of people are probably fine to be released on bail under certain conditions, or the crime isn't too violent, or they're not going to spend any real time in jail, even if they're convicted, most of us, I think, when we learn the process, we're okay with that. But there are still people out there who should not have been out here. It's possible that guy in Oshawa was one of them. Who's to blame precisely in that situation along the way of the process? That's harder to get to. Because we're not even asking the right questions. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
Listen anytime, anywhere, through your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Now, the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll continues on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
A lot of fires in the last week in Ottawa. 8 fires since last Monday. 2 of them in the same high-rise building on Donald Street in the Overbrook neighborhood. The first one sent 2 kids and a woman to hospital in critical condition, deemed suspicious. The second broke out in a bedroom not even two days after the first one, less than 48 hours. That one luckily resulted only a minor injury, but how scared would you be living in that apartment from now on? Yeah, what do you do when you live in a high-rise building? What's the proper way to behave? I've lived in a lot of high-rise buildings, and here's what happens when the fire alarm goes off. Nothing. Most people just stay in their apartments because they're so used to false alarms, they don't even leave. Should you leave immediately? I know you're not supposed to take the elevator. Don't want to be stuck in an elevator and have it open on a floor where there's a fire. That would be very bad. So you're supposed to take the stairs. Don't know where to begin. Gwen Lewis does, though, Division Chief of Fire Prevention, Ottawa Fire Services. Good morning, Gwen.
Good morning, Bill.
Hope I'm not being too cheeky calling you, Gwen.
No, not at all. I apologize
if I am. But Division Chief Lewis, I guess, it's a little complicated. So we're living in a high-rise, and we've just had these two high-rise fires. It's definitely on people's minds, I think, about what to do in case of fire. Number one thing, of course, would be to try to make sure the fire doesn't start or spread in the first place. I can't be wrong about that, am I?
That is absolutely correct.
So how do you do that? Should everybody have a fire extinguisher in their apartment?
So you can have a fire extinguisher in your apartment. But we want to have good fire safety and fire prevention tips that everyone knows.
So give me a few.
Sure. Safe cooking practices. So never leave your kitchen. If you're cooking, never leave a pot unattended.
Can't even sneak out to the bathroom. Just down the hall.
Turn it off. You know how fast a fire can happen in your kitchen.
We had one recently, yes. My mother-in-law set herself on fire with the gas stovetop.
Yeah. Fire.
It happens really fast and spreads really quickly. You're in the bathroom, no fire, you could come out and the place is ablaze.
That's correct. The next thing is electrical safety. So extension cords, spider web extension cords, extension cords as temporary wiring, and electronics, if you're charging them, follow the manufacturer's instructions and always charge them on a flat surface or a hard surface. Don't charge laptops and cell phones under a pillow, on the couch, anything like that. They do heat up, and we want to be very careful when that happens.
A lot of people fall asleep with their phone in their bed and it's plugged into a charger. Are phones a problem?
They can be.
Yeah. So you want to put it on the bedside table where it's less likely with a little bit of heat to combust?
That's correct.
That's a scary thing, huh? And the other thing you said about a lot of people have extensions now because we have so many pieces of electronic equipment and individually don't draw a lot of power. So you feel like, yeah, I can have my laptop, my iPad, my phone, a couple of other things plugged into the same outlet. So I've got, five different extension cords coming off each other. And that's a bad idea, huh?
That's correct. If you have to use an extension cord, try and use a power bar that is UL, has UL markings on it. So United Laboratories, ULC, CAN CSA, that they're approved and safe.
That's a good idea because it could also stop your devices from being damaged if there's a power blip or something too, right? So
that's
you get the
correct.
Double value out of that.
Yeah.
Okay. But once a fire started, or let's say in your own apartment, it's a fire, you're going to get out of there. Do people close the doors behind them or do they leave in a hurry?
So the best defense is to stop the fire from spreading is to close the door. So if it's in a bedroom, close the door when you leave. If it's in your unit door should close, but make sure it does close. Pull it behind you. That will stop the spread of fire.
So what do you do next? Is it the building fire alarm or is it the call to 911?
So I'm going to say if the fire is in your unit, leave, pull the pole station, alert the other tenants in the building. If the building is monitored, that will alert the fire service, and then evacuate.
What do you do about complacency when people, because I've done it too, you live in a high rise and the fire alarm goes every couple of months, sometimes more often than that, and you just kind of learn to do nothing. You don't even open your eyes if you're in bed and wonder or look outside. Should you respond to it every time and leave your unit?
So if you're in a high-rise building or a building with an elevator, you can stay in your apartment. as long as the fire is not in your unit. As we have a lot of residents in Ottawa that may be living on upper floors and may have mobility issues, your fire alarm can go off. You can stay in your unit, and that is a shelter in place.
So I've seen that you can put a wet towel under the door if smoke is coming in and stuff. When I see smoke, my instinct is to want to now get out of there. But if the hallway is already filling with smoke, maybe that's not a good idea.
That's right. You have to make your decision on are you staying or are you going as soon as the alarm goes off.
And then stick to it.
That's right. Now, if you stay in your unit and your door is closed, you can put a wet towel under the door to stop the smoke from coming in. But stay. You will have to listen to the alarm. And I know they're to wake everyone up, so they are very loud. You can go to your balcony if you have a balcony, but stay in that unit, because if you leave and the fire is in the hall or in a neighboring unit, you will be affected by the smoke.
And smoke is usually more deadly than the fire itself, isn't it?
That's correct. People do.
Is there a way to alert the fire department that you're in the building and get instructions? Can you call? I'm not sure 911 would be appropriate there because you don't want to overwhelm it. But should you reach out in some way and say, look, I'm on the fifth floor. Should I stay or should I go? And here's which unit I'm in.
So if you are in medical distress, do call 911 if you're in your unit. Larger buildings do have a voice evacuation system. And when we get on scene and investigate what's happening with the fire alarm, we will message through the voice evacuation system on what to do.
Okay, so stay in your unit if that's what you've decided to do and wait for the announcements. How high can your tallest ladder get to in an apartment building?
I'm going to say that's an operations question. And we would only rescue people from units if they are in danger.
Okay, because I'm just thinking, you know, when my condo years come, how high I'm up I'm going to live. And I don't want to be higher than the highest ladder. But you probably don't rescue many people that way anyway. You take them out
through
the hallways and down the stairs, right? You may have oxygen on them or whatever, but you're probably not taking many people down the ladder, which would be almost as scary as the fire itself.
That's right. We have buildings have fire and life safety measures in them that will protect people. And we won't start, if we have to evacuate, we will make sure it's safe to evacuate people. If people have chosen to stay in their unit, and then we do have to evacuate them, we will ensure that they are safe when we do assist with the evacuation.
Thanks for your time today, Division Chief. Appreciate it.
Okay. Have a good day.
Division Chief Gwen Lewis. I just call her Gwen. From Fire Prevention, Ottawa Fire Services. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
Now, the inbox.
Bill, I can't believe your brain is not exploding. So students at the universities, place for higher learning, at least that's what they say. Anyway, my point, so they're not going to leave until their demands are met. Drop your $50,000 tuition a year and leave my children alone. Just wait, Bill. I wouldn't take Netanyahu's word for standing alone just yet. I don't think he realized that Betty, the art history major at U of Ottawa, had set up a tent on campus over the weekend. Pretty sure that should change his mind, says Jeff, somewhat sarcastically, I feel, in Riverside South. By the way, some explosions in Rafah, east side of Rafah, already underway this morning, but Israel's saying it will be a limited military intrusion. No, Bill, not all public servants stand with Hamas. Union leaders should stick to negotiating wages and benefits, says Anonymous in Ottawa. Yeah, I think if I were a member of that union, I'd be on the phone today. Andre from Osgood says many of the Palestine protesters don't even know about the October attack. Yeah, I think that may be true, but hard to imagine. They certainly are conveniently erasing it from the discussion, aren't they? Hey, Bill, let's be clear. Our universities don't provide education anymore. They provide indoctrination. At a minimum, They aren't teaching critical thinking. And of course, when the time comes, no one protesting will put their money where their mouth is and refuse their Canada pension plan. That would take character, something these campers lack. Talk is cheap, says Mark. Thank you for your rant about the protesters. Well done. Welcome back, Bob from Stittsville. And there are a lot of responses to the protests. Don't understand how these student protesters can live in encampments long term. Don't they have summer jobs or classes to report to? Asks Nancy. Bill, Chuck's moved into former Montana's location on Baxter Road next to IKEA at least 2 years ago. Since opening, they've had four domestic drafts every day from 11 to 5. Yep, missed you, Bill. Thank you, Steve. Chuck's low prices, there is a $3 surcharge on every bill. It's explained on the menu. Angela, I found it was cheap even at that. Just saying. Morning, Patricia. What's coming up on your show?
Good morning, Bill. How are you doing on this beautiful Monday?
It is nice.
It is gorgeous out there. A day after we all stood out in the rain for 5 hours watching cyclists go by, a couple of thousand, 7,000 of them out on that course in the pouring rain in between a gorgeous Saturday and a gorgeous Monday. It's killer.
Cycling in the rain, that does not look like fun.
Yeah, we were amazed at the troopers. They raised over $2 million for the oncology care at CHEO, so that was pretty amazing. We're going to have to talk a little bit of sports today. There's a bit of a disappointing weekend for fans of both your Toronto Maple Leafs, Bill, Saturday night, that OT loss.
You know, and I've become indifferent.
Yeah, you're immune.
I called for a shakeup in the team 2 years ago, but they just keep doing the same thing over and over, hoping for a different result. Why would it be different?
One playoff series win in 8 years. And last night,
you can't pay half the salary to four guys.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of talk about Mitch Marner this morning.
What part of team did they forget? I'm surprised there wasn't a little more parity in the Women's Hockey League, though.
Yeah, the Ottawa team had three chances to get it done. Looked like they were sitting pretty in a playoff spot. Did not happen. Lost what was a much closer game than what it appeared last night. A couple of empty nets scored against them. So they are done. We'll look back at the season because overall the season for this league was a win. But unfortunately for Ottawa fans who were thinking they might see a playoff game at CTC, that is not going to happen. So a lot of people already thinking about next year when it comes to hockey. And we've got the really tough story that you were leading the newscast with. Katie Griffin is looking at some of the details around this 15-year-old who was stabbed last week, died of his injuries on Sunday after what appeared to be a fight between a group of teenagers. I think every parent's worst nightmare hearing that kind of story. So we'll get into that a little bit this morning as well.
And I want to answer this one question because it's come up about four different times, my rant about bail reform. Everything you say makes sense, Bill, but how is it that Tamara Leach was held without bail for, what, 3 months? Make it make sense. That's an easy one, actually. She was given bail. Spit in the court's face by not living up to the orders of her bail. What do you think is going to happen? And then she was released later anyway. So you're oversimplifying it a little bit. But yeah, you can't tell the court, I'll do this, this, and this, and not this, this, and this, and then go and just break those rules and expect there are no consequences. Otherwise, there'd be no rules. So it's a kind of a convenient reading of history, I think you're giving there. I am done. You have a great show, Patricia. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Bye-bye.